Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
The cooler space is the number one spot that you run into problems in the future. It's now roughly 1,500 square feet for the main cooler and 450 for the decomp cooler.
You got they're double stacked in there?
Well, no, we've had to go to five high racking to make that work.
The voice you're hearing there, I know it's not familiar to you. His name is Russell McElroy. He is the architect that is working with the District 1 Medical Examiner to design the new facility, talking there about the very, very limited square footage and space used to store bodies at the current facility in the basement, not basement of Sacred Heart. I mean, it kind of is, it kind of is not. Anyway, a facility that is completely inadequate to the operation District 1 Medical Examiner. And then just talking about the increase in capacity for simply storing bodies that they need and will have at the new facility.
This facility is planned for that growth via that method, just like at Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. It was started out with 24 bodies on carts, and now it's up to about 38 bodies because we put racks.
Correct.
So this cooler would house, I think it's 33 on carts, or maybe 38 on carts.
I'll help you. I can help you there, Dan. It's 35 on carts.
35 on carts.
And then 30 that will be on five-tier racking.
So in the 65 vicinity compared to like the 35 vicinity now, which means, you know, not quite a doubling of base capacity, but, you know, pretty close to it. And, you know, just them talking about this is one of those sort of basic operational details that, you know, it's a challenge to manage the high volume of bodies that the medical examiner's office is supposed to be responsible for in what is now essentially a shared cooler space. And when they talk about the decomp cooler, they're talking about a facility we saw that was completely inaccessible and unusable. And like, you know, backseat middle on the hump would have been an upgrade. So I don't think that that's even a fair thing to include in this number. But the challenge is, you know, if you have space for 60 and you're handling 10 at a time, no problem. But if you have, you know, space for 35 on the gurneys and then another 30 up on, you know, racks, basically. If you're having to shuffle and, you know, play traffic cop as you're moving these around, that's its own logistical problem. And that's what they have now, especially because they're not just using it for themselves, but it's shared space with other entities like Sacred Heart, right?
What that means, folks, is if you have residents that might stay for a longer period of time, they would likely choose to put those on a rack. If they're a quick in and out, they would keep them on a gurney, on a cart. That saves your workman's comp claims, and it also just creates an additional level of safety overall.
Right, because you're not having to move things around, lift them, and just, you know, shuffle, basically, the inventory. I mean, I hate to talk about it in such detached terms, but that's the reality of it. And so here's the thing. There are a couple of key disagreements right now between basically Escambia County and the other three counties, Santa Rosa, Okaloosa, and Walton, and the medical examiner, who's basically in agreement with Santa Rosa, Okaloosa, and Walton. One of those has to do with whether or not to keep the facility at Sacred Heart in any way, shape, or form. The medical examiner's office doesn't want that at all because it doesn't make any sense. I'm giving you my opinion and hers, and the opinion of other experts. Escambia County, meanwhile, is holding on to it like a kid with a half-eaten lollipop that they're scared somebody's going to take away for reasons that nobody can quite explain. Okay, we'll get to more of that in a moment. The other question is the overall size and cost of the new facility. And basically, they had, you know, sort of planned to do a Cadillac. And then they said, well, that is way too expensive. Can you not do, you know, like just an ordinary sedan? Well, they came back with a smaller, less expensive version of that. The challenge is that the more you whittle away at the size, scope, and capacity of the new facility, the more you put yourself in a position where you're going to build it, and then as soon as you move in, because of growth and the number of people that live in this area and therefore die in this area, you're just basically going to have to re-expand it again. And there's no point in putting, you know, $18 million into a new facility in order to have to build another $10 million. And, of course, once you mobilize, remobilize, change, you're going to have to cost more than if you just build it right the first time.
Do you mind if I elaborate a little bit on the expansion and what happens when we go to build a facility?
Sure.
If we build it too small. So we've done 165 laboratories or so that deal with forensic science and medical examiner facilities. And we were doing the Nebraska State Police facility. And they took the approach that if it wasn't needed right now, then let's just not do it. And we encourage them not to take that approach. Because what happens is literally as soon as you move in, potentially you may be obsolete without the opportunity to even add new staff, and you're right back where you are today, just in a newer building.
So build it for the future with the capacity that you're going to need for the next, 20, 25 years, as long as this facility is going to last, instead of building just barely enough to scrape by at current levels. And then in 5 years, you're jammed up again. Like, there's no point in doing it that way. But again, the basic problem you have here, and I'm trying my best, whenever we talk about this, to remedy this problem, is it's like so many other things that government does. You don't personally encounter the problems of an overburdened, underfunded, inadequately facilitated, I know it's not a word, medical examiner. Unless you're like a family member of a decedent, and then you might experience some of this. It's an invisible problem to you. But it's a problem that impacts on their ability to process corpses, their ability to find justice for the deceased, their ability to even conduct the operations of, testifying appropriately. And they are key witnesses in, every homicide trial here in, this four-county area. And the problem is you don't see it when the counties don't do their job, or in this case, when Escambia County doesn't do its job. You don't see the problem. It's invisible to you. It's kind of like when we don't properly fund, building jail space and hiring COs and, that kind of stuff. You don't see that problem because you don't deal with these issues. But you do see the pothole on the road. Okay? And because you see the pothole in the road, there is a natural motivation for, the county to basically maintain the roads, because you as a citizen, if you have to drive over potholes enough, you start calling. When enough people start calling, they start looking dumb. They don't want to look dumb. They don't want to feel dumb. So they fund resurfacing. Still not adequately. Escambia County still doesn't do that adequately either. But at least there's kind of a natural check on their misbehavior. When it comes to the medical examiner's facility and various elements connected to it, it's hard to wrap your brain around why this is an important thing. And that's why I've been trying to, explain this and why we went and did the tour, so you could see for yourself, that this is kind of important, because several of the commissioners don't get it. They just don't get it. And when you've got a guy here who says, we've built 165 facilities, including, for the state police in another state, and I'm just telling you, build as much as you're really going to need in the future. And by the way, don't try and do it in two places. It's crazy talk to try to do two different operations for one office.
Dan, it's always the goal of a facility, if they are divided like that, to try to come back together into a single facility. The inefficiencies of being in separate places, even like you are now with your autopsy in one place and your office in another, it is almost always the case across all 50 states where we've done these, where they're trying to bring them back into a single facility.
So stop it. Stop it. Now, Robert Bender, the commissioner for District 4, is put in a bit of an awkward position, okay? Because I know Robert's a smart guy. He's a very capable guy. I trust Robert. He does a good job, okay? Sometimes he gets a bad rep, but I disagree with those criticisms. Robert is in the awkward position of having to go, in this case, last week to the meeting at the Domes Board. And, he's not the official representative, Eric Gilmore is, but somebody from the county commission needed to be there to try to, see if we can't make some progress on this. And the problem he's got is he's representing Barry, Burgosh, and May, arguably, who will always vote however Stephen Barry says on issues that aren't related to his particular concerns. And so the three of them, including all of the pissing match over the letters that were, you know, written at the behest of Stephen Barry and the Smokies-filled room and the Burgosh blog and the allegations against Deanna Oleskine, all that crap, okay? The backdrop is that. So somebody's got to go be an adult and try to advance this conversation. None of them can go. I mean, can you imagine Stephen Barry is there with, you know, Dan Shebler and Deanna Oleskine, who, you know, he helped slander? I mean, it just doesn't work. So Bender is there representing the position of the board. And the position of the board is they want to keep Sacred Heart open. And they want to put, you know, $4 million or so into the Sacred Heart facility, a private institution for which they will get what benefit? Not clear. But he's there trying to say, well, look, you know, I can't make this happen. And so my board says this. And so he's trying to ask questions and create a situation where the medical examiner would be willing to try the two facility approach. And what Dan and Deanna Oleskine and the architect are trying to tell him is, boy, that don't make no sense. Nobody does it this way on purpose. It's silly because you're going to have, you know, split staffing. You're going to have to duplicate technology and equipment like the Lodox that allows them to quickly x-ray all the bodies. There's a whole bunch of reasons why that doesn't make any sense, and there's no real advantage to it. The more they talk about it, the less it makes sense. But again, Bender's kind of stuck. Because even, and I don't know exactly where he lies on this scale, you know, if he wants the second. I think he also kind of thinks there's a value to a second facility. But I know he represents a board that thinks that. Although Mike Kohler, who's actually the expert in this area, says, boys, y'all are being dumb about this. But they won't hear it because they don't want to be told that they're wrong.
The operational question that Commissioner Bender raises, and you introduce opportunity for error. You introduce confusion where there doesn't need to be any. You introduce operational inefficiency by operating in multiple spaces with a limited staff and limited doctors. With I don't know what benefit.
Exactly. I don't know what benefit. If you couldn't understand, there was a, you know, partially a Zoom meeting and the audio was not particularly great, but you introduce inefficiencies, you have security issues, you have duplication of staff, duplication of machinery. You know, how exactly are you going to do this? Oh, by the way, did you know we're already very understaffed? So the notion that somehow we're at full with our number of doctors, we're not. We're just bringing one more on next month and that'll bring us to three, should be five. You know, and then you're going to split off some of that staff to sometimes come over to Sacred Heart and do their work and then sometimes go back. And, you know, again, I think Bender's trying to raise sort of what seem like reasonable questions. Well, can't you just do the, you know, the autopsy lights or, you know, the sort of low level investigations here and do the big ones at the Avalon complex when that gets built? And Deanna Oleskine is like, well, how do you know which one it is?
Yeah. Hello.
How do you know which one it is until you do it? You can't know until you, well, they come in looking like, well, it might not be. It comes in looking like a suicide. Well, it might not be. It just, it's the kind of things that a novice asks that are not unreasonable to ask maybe, but then an expert who actually works in this field, and she said this the other day, is, well, come watch me, sir. You know, come see what we do. And you will not say these dumb things anymore.
Can I ask you something real quick?
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
When we were there, did any of those bodies look, I don't know, murdered to you?
I don't know. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
You can't tell.
Yeah, you can't tell.
And even ones that come in looking one way, you can't tell. It's just,
sorry.
They're just, you're exactly right. The problem is, especially for commissioners who haven't seen in operation, because as we've been told, none of them have come and watched them do the work. Only two of them, Burgosh and Bender, have been there when they weren't doing it. Now, I think Bender might have gone to one somewhere else in another county and watched some actual operations, you know, doing autopsies. It's not the same as seeing the problems in this facility with this staff and the volume of bodies they do, right? So anyway, just, it's frustrating. So where are we at right now? Like, where things actually stand? The three other counties are at this point. The argument is over whether they proceed without Escambia County and then sue Escambia County. Is the question, which none of them want to do. But that's how bad it's gotten with Escambia County not participating in this conversation properly. So they're going to try to meet again with Escambia County, like the medical examiners and Escambia County is going to try to meet and see if we can hash some of this out and get them to see the light. Because otherwise, basically, they're going to have to pay twice as much per autopsy because only three counties are funding a facility for a little bit more than half of the total autopsies that are done in the four-county district. It's just, It's infuriating. And I understand why Dr. Oleski is mad about this. I understand. On top of all of the other nonsense that had nothing to do with any of this except for people's egos got hurt. 525 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Heart failure, carpal tunnel syndrome, shortness of breath, stomach issues, lower back pain. How does it all add up? If you have heart failure and any of those seemingly unrelated symptoms sound familiar, it's time to talk with your cardiologist and get the full picture. They may add up to transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy. ATTR-CM is a rare and underdiagnosed disease. Recognize the signs and discuss them with your doctor soon. Learn more at connectwithyourheart.com. That's connectwithyourheart.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Bands on the Beach is back. Bring a lawn chair or a towel and enjoy live music at the stage on Pensacola Beach. There's plenty of room to spread out and enjoy the sand, the sunset, and great live music every Tuesday night at 7. This week, the Astronauts will be rocking the Gulfside Pavilion at Bands on the Beach with their high-energy party tunes from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Dance the night away at Pensacola Beach with Bands on the Beach. Remember, no pets and no glass.
When hurricanes approach, no one covers the storms like News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Deal. I'll make you a deal. If you can get out of here before I take my coat off, I won't clean up the floor with you and mess up your pretty little costume.
You don't know me. You only think you do.
Good morning, 527 on News Radio 92.3. If you're playing the Guess That Movie at Home game, Get Shorty. Get Shorty, which we just finished watching again for like the fifth time yesterday. Ah, oh, so good. Gene Hackman and Delroy Lindo and James Gandolfini and Rene Russo and Danny DeVito and, of course, John Travolta. Great movie. Great movie. And, who's the... I can't think of his name. I'll think of it in a second. Who's the gangster guy in that? Ray Bones. I just can't think of his name right now. Anyway, 437-1620, 437-1620. Let's go to the newsroom now. David Wayne has our headlines. David?
Well, police in Miami today are preparing for former President Trump's arraignment in federal court. Police Chief Manuel Morales there says they're prepared to handle crowds of up to 50,000 people. And, of course, all of this is there's protests planned on both sides of the issue there. And speaking of that, the White House says President Biden wants to make sure his administration does not politicize the Department of Justice. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre telling reporters yesterday that President Biden respects the agency's independence and rule of law. Artificial intelligence researchers may be risking their mental and emotional health. Now, that is according to the American Psychological Association. That says that researchers feel socially disconnected at work because of the sudden changes of working with AI. It also found the employees that are working with AI are more likely to suffer from insomnia or alcoholism.
I'm sorry, but the people who are most closely working with the robot overlords are suffering insomnia. Alcohol
they're torn
abuse,
up inside.
And they're feeling yep. anxious, separated, and marginalized from the rest of society because of what they know and do on a daily basis.
Building Skynet is difficult work, Andrew.
I know. Apparently it takes a toll, you know, to build the destructors of human future. All right. Well, you know, great for them. David, thanks so much for the update, 437-1620. Oh, by the way, I don't know if you know this. It just, you know— you remember Matt Gaetz made the comment the other day about how the it was interesting to him that the charges against President Trump were filed the same day as allegations against Joe Biden showed up. You might not know the allegations. There's an FBI document from a highly credible confidential source who has given all kinds of other information to the government, who basically says that Burisma, when Hunter Biden was on the board, Burisma, through intermediaries, paid a $5 million bribe to the former vice president, his dad, Joe Biden. That's all under investigation now, right? So, you know,
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Donald Trump today becomes the first former president charged with federal crimes, accused of trying to hide and keep classified documents taken from the White House. The arraignment's in Miami.
President Trump expected to show up here to appear in court around 3 o'clock this afternoon. Here at the courthouse, Miami city officials say they have layered plans in place to deal with the crowds.
Fox's Jonathan Seri. Human remains are found at the scene of a tanker truck fire on Sunday that destroyed an I-95 overpass in Philadelphia.
Family members have identified the deceased driver as 53-year-old Nathaniel Moody, a husband, father, and Army veteran. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg said, "We are fortunate there were not more human casualties. The supply chain, however, will be significantly impacted."
Fox's Jackie Ibanez. At least 9 people are shot and wounded in Denver. A suspect's in custody, also shot. Crowds had been out celebrating the Denver Nuggets' first NBA title. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. 73 this morning. It is partly cloudy. Beautiful sunrise right now. We're hearing from the alleged victim of yesterday morning's home invasion on Majors Road. He spoke with Channel 3 after 5 masked men with guns allegedly broke into his home and then demanded money.
I thought they'd fix to kill me and my wife. I think if I'd have maybe pulled out a gun or act defense, I think they'd have killed me. I feel like somebody that knows me real close planned this here and had them to do it.
And he reportedly said he didn't have any money and was pistol whipped. Sheriff Chip Simmons says it was not a random act, and his deputies are working to find the individuals responsible. They're asking anybody with information to contact the sheriff's office or Crime Stoppers. Well, if you were out driving along 3 Mile Bridge about noon yesterday, you may have seen some emergency crews after a boat that was anchored near the bridge started taking on water and capsizing.
3 victims fell into the water. And within 12 minutes, they were on Pensacola Fireboat 1. So they're all doing okay. And luckily had on flotation devices, which is pretty key to their successful rescue and doing okay right now.
That's Pensacola Fire Chief Jenny Craner during yesterday's press conference with Mayor D.C. Reeves. Over the last few weeks, we've had multiple reports and photos from travelers at Pensacola International Airport showing very long lines trying to get through security. Mayor D.C. Reeves says it's all because of security upgrades that TSA is making at the moment. He says those delays are going to continue for the near future anyway.
I normally would get there an hour and 1 minute before it started. I get it. That's how some people travel. But this is, you can't do that right now. I mean, you really have to heed the 2 hours and take that seriously.
Since late April, TSA has been replacing their baggage screening equipment. GOP presidential candidate, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, chiming in on Donald Trump's arraignment today. He says it would be bad for anybody, let alone a former president.
Put aside taking the documents in the first place. But then when you start getting asked in May of 21, nicely, with a letter from the archivist saying, could you please give them back? And you ignore it, ignore it, ignore it.
And Christie spoke during a CNN town hall yesterday where he said the former president's indictment is evidence filled with facts being the facts being devastating, he says. And he also said that the problems were self-inflicted. Trump, of course, set to appear in court later on today in Miami. The victims of the deadly Orlando Pulse nightclub shooting being remembered 7 years now after the tragic incident. Flags across the state flew at half staff Monday in honor of the 49 people that died in the shooting. At the time of the shooting, it was the deadliest mass shooting in American history. It's 5:34, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We are going to be seeing a chance of some afternoon showers and thunderstorms today. 40% chance of rain overall, high near 90 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. For Wednesday, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, high near 90 degrees. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you, Brooke. 535, it's 73 in Pensacola, 74 in Gulf Breeze, and 71 right now in Milton. Our next news at 6. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Hey, Pensacola. News Radio 92.3 has it all. Pensacola Morning News, Pep Talk, Pensacola Right Now, Brian Kilmeade, Dave Ramsey. Local news, Fox News, WEAR News, traffic on the fives, Florida State football, election coverage, hurricane coverage, breaking news and weather coverage. News Radio 92.3, now heard on 95.3 and AM 1620. Informative, local, dependable.
It's summertime, and that means it's barbecue time. So for the best selection of meats, it's Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli. From baby back ribs to Wagyu brisket, pork butts and shoulders, to chicken and all types of exotic meats to put on the grill. At Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, you'll find meat rubs and spices, as well as a large selection of fine wine, cheeses, and great deli items to add to your summer cookout fun. Call ahead for your sandwich pickups, too. Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli. It's a great place to meet up and wine all you want. Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, on the west side of Pensacola.
Change. Positive change is happening all around us. Greater Pensacola is growing, and that's why I joined the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Join us. The Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. We believe local businesses are the cornerstone of a great community.
Never miss a breaking news story or important weather update again. Download the News Radio Pensacola app and opt in for push notifications.
Here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. And yesterday, had a chance to talk to Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson. Oh, give us just a second to get these ducks in a row. It does happen every once in a while. Candy was busy eating some gushers. I don't know how I can describe your face, by the way, about the gushers, but... I've never seen a face so disgusted about anything ever in my entire life. They did not hold up to your childhood memories. Is that right? Did not work out?
Never had them. Joe Ford requested them for our snack drawer, and I was like, yeah.
Yeah, sure, we'll try this. No. Not good at all. Oh, my goodness. Channel 3 is doing some really good follow-up, having this bear expert on to talk about how, you know, if you happen to be at the beach and there's a bear, don't try to touch it. Don't go close. You know, that was my first reaction. I saw all these people, like, at the beach trying to, you know, play with the bear and thinking, what are you doing? That is a bear. If that bear were on your porch, are you going to go up and be like, hey, bear, let's talk? You know, like, no, you'd know better. But somehow at the beach, oh, this is cute. I'm going to touch the bear. I mean, seriously, like, well, how did you lose that arm, sir? Let me tell you this story about Navarre, Florida. You know, like, it's just, you know.
We both know that's how I'm going to go out. Yeah, I know.
It's going to be something like, well,
hey,
but, you
y'all,
know,
come
I guess,
check out
I guess
this
then we'll have stories to tell at your funeral. So
we sure
that'll
will.
Be fine.
Would you like to introduce Sheriff Bob Johnson?
Sure. Yesterday, had a chance to talk to Santa Rosa County Sheriff Bob Johnson. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Before we get started, I just want to say you have made Candy's day.
Yeah.
She's Candy is... I don't know if you can hear her over my mic. She's very excited
so
to have
excited.
You on today.
Gosh, we love you.
Well, I love you too, Candy.
Everybody deserves a Candy walk-up moment, and they do request them sometimes. So, but you get it yeah. voluntarily without being asked for.
Okay. I say Bob. You say Johnson. Bob. Johnson.
So
I didn't know I had a fan club.
Oh, you do.
You definitely
absolutely do. All right. So in Pace over the weekend, we obviously know there was a big story that you guys put out a Facebook post about. Details here so far have felt fairly cryptic. We've got a lot of rumor mill stuff going on, but tell us what happened at the Nico's Japanese Steakhouse in Pace.
Yeah, well, a couple of families got sick. They ate at the same hibachi table together, and then they got home, and then they started feeling ill, and then some of them got really sick, and they all went to the hospital, and they tested positive for a narcotic. Not at liberty to say which one right at the moment, but because it's still being investigated. But so far as we know, all of them are going to be okay. And the people at the restaurant are cooperating 100% in the investigation. They've been very helpful and forthcoming, and the investigation continues. We do have a possible suspect that we're wanting to interview in reference to possibly tainting some food.
Okay, so I know that I will ask, so I know you know that I will ask, and you will say what you can say. But the first question I think everybody has in this case is if these people were basically poisoned with a narcotic of some kind, are we looking at an employee as a suspect, or are we looking at a patron as a suspect?
Yeah, we can't really say. And I know that you know that I know that you know that I can't say. So, I'm hoping sometime in the next couple of days, once we interview the person we need to talk to, I'll be able to be more forthcoming. Okay. But right now, it's a fluid situation. Let's put it that way.
How serious was it for these people? I mean, I know you said that some of them got medical treatment. All of them are going to be okay. And again, I know that you've said you can't say which substance it was, so we make our inferences. I know we've all read stuff online, and you know, who knows, but I mean, how bad was it for the patrons?
Well, for a couple of them, they got really, really sick. But as I said, nothing life-threatening that we were made aware of, but they got pretty sick. And, you know, we take this kind of stuff seriously, and that's why we've got several different agencies investigating. You know, because basically if, you know, somebody goes in and poison a food source or tries to poison a food source, that's basically a domestic terrorism, and they can be prosecuted federally, which is once, if we, you know, find the suspect to be viable and, we have enough probable cause, I'm sure we'll ask our federal partners with the FBI maybe to prosecute. So it's a very serious crime.
Not because it's something, like we tend to think of terrorism as being politically motivated, but you're saying because it's a food source contamination that is by definition within the purview of the terrorism statutes. Is that what you're saying?
Right. When you try to poison, you know, a bunch of people, it's different. A husband tries to poison a wife or something, okay, yeah, we handle that. But when you're trying to poison a group of people, that can be considered domestic terrorism. And like I said, we have no problem inviting the FBI in to help us with it.
Okay, so I know what it looks like from the outside and from, you know, what you've told us so far. Is there still room for the possibility that, I don't know how to say this exactly, but that it was unintentional, that, you know, somebody just kind of like, I don't know, had something on their hands and they didn't realize it and it got in the food, or it was in their pocket. And it, you know, like, I mean, is that a possibility still in this case?
Yeah. We're not going to rule out anything right now. We're very in the early stages of the investigation, so we're not going to rule out anything. But if it did occur that way, it's going to be, I would say that's going to surprise me.
Okay.
if that is in fact the way it happened. And I'm not saying it didn't. I'm just saying that would be, it would shock me if that was what occurred.
So you guys are, and I know all of this is conditional on the fact that the investigation's ongoing, but it looks likely to have been deliberate based on the information that you have and are able to disclose so far.
Yeah, I would say that it's better than 50-50 that it was intentional. Okay. That would be my guess. And you know, like I said before, this is a guess because I don't know all the facts of the situation.
Sure.
Major Crimes briefed me of what they know so far. And, you know, I mean, it's still developing.
Yeah.
I mean, they have to talk to this person of interest first, and then hopefully we can narrow it down and then come to a conclusion.
Safe to say this is unprecedented, incredibly rare, not the kind of thing that you see any sort of pattern with this particular restaurant or any other restaurants in Santa Rosa County?
Yeah, I can say this since I've worked at Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office since 1993, and this is the first case I'm aware of. So I would say to the citizens, don't panic. Don't say I can't go out to eat anywhere. I mean, I still go out to eat in Santa Rosa County. It's not scared me, and I know all the details so far. So I would say this is pretty unprecedented, and people should not be afraid to go to their favorite restaurant or anything like that. I think we have a pretty good suspect, and like I said, once we get to interview this person, hopefully we can come to a conclusion and we'll be back to normal.
Yeah, well, very scary stuff, obviously, for the patrons. I'm certainly glad that they're all going to be okay. Just one thing more before we let you go, Sheriff.
Yeah.
You have a golf tournament coming up a week from Friday, right?
We do, June 23rd at Hidden Creek. We're pretty excited. We have one every year for the Emerald Coast Exceptional Families, which is a great organization. They support special needs families in Santa Rosa County, and they're very good at what they do, and they play a really big role in the special needs community. And we're excited to put it on. It's at Hidden Creek in Navarre, and you can go online and register on our Facebook page or our website or the Emerald Coast Exceptional Family website. I think we have like 5 teams left, so there's not many teams left. So if you want to golf with us, you definitely want to go ahead and register. The tee off is going to be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday the 23rd.
So I guess a week from Friday, if somebody says, man, that sheriff, he's really teed off, they'd be correct.
Yeah, they would.
No.
They wouldn't be. I'll be very teed off next Friday.
Sheriff Bob Johnson, Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office. Sir, as always, we appreciate the time and the information and what you do to keep us safe, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Andrew. And tell Candy I love her.
Oh, it's reciprocated.
We love you so much. Thank you for everything you do, sir.
818 here on News Radio. Yeah, so
I meant to take that part out.
No, I won't.
I'm such a fangirl.
So not
you go, Bob Johnson.
Not only will he be teed off, but he's actually planning to be teed off. If you can believe that. Wow. Premeditated and all. 5:47 here on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, bad grammar jokes. Hey, if you're looking for that next vehicle, Frontier Motors. And, there's all kinds of reasons why. I'm a satisfied customer, in case it's not clear to you. I am a very, very, very satisfied customer at Frontier Motors. That's why I do ads for them, because I love them so much. And one of the things, in fact, some of the things that I really like about them are things that I didn't even know till later. But that cements my opinion. Because, for example, when we bought the vehicle, we bought a Honda Odyssey. It was a year old at the time. Got it on a lease. It came back from an auction that didn't happen. They couldn't sell it. And it came at an auction out of Orlando. And we got it up here. Okay? Great car. We've been loving it ever since we had it. But about 6 months after we bought the car from Frontier, Calvin, our sales guy, calls me kind of out of the blue and says, how's the car? And I'm like, it's fine. Leave me alone. But wanting to check up. And I'm like, it's fine. Okay, fine. A year after, so 6 months after that, he calls again and he says, is there anything that's wrong with the car? Just want to check and make sure you're happy. I'm like, well, one of the physical keys doesn't work right. The fob's fine and we're never going to have to use the physical key. So we'll bring it in. We'll replace it. And, me, I'm kind of like, I bet you will for $150. And so he's like, no, we'll take care of it on us. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you bought a car, you get 2 keys. You expected that, that's what you get. So I brought it in, they fixed the key, and that was it. Took about, 8 minutes, and I drove off. That was it. A year after I bought the car. Like, that's crazy. Who does that? Well, Frontier does that. Because they stand by the vehicles. Because they're not trying to take, just and get you to buy one car. Yes, they want you to buy one car. But they want you to buy this car and the next car and the car after that because you know you can trust that they're going to take care of you with everything front to back. So that's how they do business. And it shows. For more than 25 years, they've been helping people just like you get in a good quality used vehicles right behind that big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Is your house making you sick? Learn about the hazards lurking in your home that can affect your health due to high humidity levels and excess moisture. High humidity levels and excess moisture inside the home are the leading cause of insect infestation, mold, mildew, musty odors, and fungi, which can result in making you sick. Condensations on windows and vents, blistering or peeling paint, and cupping of hardwood floors are all signs of high humidity levels and excess moisture. Learn more tomorrow at 9 on Pep Talk with Lisa Murphy from Southern Climate Solutions.
Insurance.
You love your car or truck, right? We love it too. This is Mike Ryan and Mike Ryan's Truck and Auto Accessories. For a cooler summer and protections from harmful UV rays, we'll tint the windows. For safety and security, we have alarms, backup cameras, and dash cams. And for the most beautiful vehicle on the block, our full detailing service will make it look brand new. We have so many custom accessories, it's impossible to list them all here. So come see us at Mike Ryan's Truck and Auto Accessories on Industrial Boulevard at W Street, just north of Marcus Point Baptist Church.
Enroll today in summer or fall classes at Pensacola State College and join the 95% of PSC students who are going to school loan-free. PSC offers over 350 scholarships and more than 100 programs to choose from, ranging from career certificates to baccalaureate degrees in a format that best works for you. Plus, your education courses are guaranteed to transfer to Florida public universities. So don't wait. Register for summer or fall classes today online at pensacolastate.edu. Go here, get there, Pensacola State College.
This is Paul Epstein with Running Wild. Join me tomorrow at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Discover why we at Running Wild are the running and fitness experts in the Pensacola and Fairhope communities, specializing in fitting you in the best shoe, apparel, and training for your unique needs. We pride ourselves on serving, training, and encouraging you to reach your goals. So bring your questions tomorrow at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
This is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test.
Tune in to News Radio Pensacola today and stay informed about what's happening in your community. We're here to keep you connected. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
And just like that, the one tiny aspect of government I enjoyed was clubbed to death before my eyes.
Tennessee. 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 Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed down.
What do you mean, who am I? What are you trying to say?
Man, I haven't heard this since.
That's part of my goal. Is like I'm resurrecting all of our youth.
I am still thirsty. Yeah, man. Rest and development,
remember,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Remember that party at Jim's at the apartment complex on the third floor sophomore year of college?
Yeah, where we all brought two beers.
That's the music I'm going for. Yeah. 5:52 on News Radio 92. Back when you could be friends with the guy who was the DJ at the independent station run by the school, you know? That kind of thing.
Or like me.
In my case, I still am.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. She works in this room. Yeah. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
The Supreme Court expected to rule on the use of affirmative action in college admissions any day now. A pair of cases, one at the University of North Carolina, another at Harvard, allege that the practice harms white and Asian students. In the Harvard case, student John Wang was turned down by six elite universities despite a perfect score on the SAT's math section and a 4.65 high school GPA. The nation's largest specialty baby product retailer, Bye Bye Baby, could possibly survive the bankruptcy of its parent company, Bed Bath & Beyond. Analysts say the company is already attracting interest from outside buyers, CNBC reporting one competitor, an online store called Babylist, and an unnamed retail group have expressed some interest in buying part of Bye Bye Baby's assets. And new figures showing the toll fentanyl has taken on the U.S. Army. The Washington Post out with a report that shows 127 soldiers were lost to fentanyl between 2015 and 2022. That's more than the number that was killed in combat in Afghanistan during the same time frame.
Yeah, it is a terrible number. Yeah, that 147, is that what it was?
127.
127. Yeah, still just terrible, absolutely terrible. Oh, and then, you know, speaking of the big news that came out yesterday, Pat Sajak.
No.
Is leaving Wheel of Fortune after this season. 41 years in. Anybody want to guess Pat Sajak's age?
108.
Close.
But he's found the fountain of youth, though.
Well, you know, they have a phrase for that, Nip Tuck. I don't think it's the special water he's drinking, you know, but
he's been there and he's looked the same. You're
41
right,
years, yes.
Him and Vanna White both.
Oh, so
76
beautiful.
Years old. Yeah.
No.
Right. Well, but think about it. Was Pat Sajak hosting Wheel of Fortune when you were a kid?
Yeah, of course,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So
yeah.
He's got to be 20 years older than you, kid you.
I know.
Okay? And that would put, well, in your case, that puts him at 49. But you know, but he looks, like if you just walked up to him and looked at him, you'd say, you know, mid-50s, you know, right?
Yeah, if that.
Nope.
Yeah, he looks great.
No. 76. Wow. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 554, News Radio 92.3. What else do we have going on? Oh, this is kind of a, I don't know, just call it interesting, I guess. And it's the sort of story that probably won't get an awful lot of attention outside of, I don't know, certain circles. But we are that certain circle, okay? I pay attention to religion news. And there's a really interesting thing developing right now. You ever heard of the Purpose Driven Life book? The book Purpose by Rick Warren. Okay, the book itself has caused a lot of controversy within Christian circles. It was wildly popular, goodness, 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Anyway, Rick Warren, the pastor, founder, pastor of Saddleback Church, he wrote this book. And, of course, you know, mega church, massively successful. In, I think it was 2021, somewhere in that vintage, Saddleback, which had been a member of the Southern Baptist Convention, okay, decided to ordain female pastors, which, according to the Southern Baptist Convention and, you know, the New Testament, at least my reading of it and a conservative reading of it anyway, you're not supposed to have that. There are certain offices that are specifically for men only. Now, this is one of those weird, rare points of agreement between the Catholic Church and the conservative, you know, evangelicals, right? Is, you know, no female pastors. It's actually an interesting split. If you know the terrain of, like, you know, Christian denominations, you're, like, typically, you're more gifts-oriented churches, you know, your charismatics, your Pentecostals, and those folks, they ordain and believe women should be in leadership roles over men, authority over men. I'm not saying all, but typically, that doesn't bother them. And they're otherwise very conservative churches. You know, liberal churches, anything goes, it's fine. But among conservative churches, it's typically the Pentecostals and the charismatics that don't believe there should be any gender distinction and authority in the church. But again, Southern Baptists, Catholics, and Catholics even more so, right? No female priests, right? So anyway, or priestesses, or whatever you would call them. Anyway,
priests.
Making a long story longer. Rick Warren, and I don't know the history, whether they were actually expelled from the Southern Baptist Convention or whether it's sort of pending, but at the annual convention coming up here shortly, there's going to be this conversation about Saddleback, whether it is allowed to remain in the Southern Baptist Convention because it is in violation of Southern Baptist Convention rules. And again, the Southern Baptist Convention is a collection of like-minded churches. It's not an official entity of the sort that you have, like with the Catholic Church or even with the Methodist Church. They're all independent, but they have these kind of principles. And if somebody is, you know, outside of the paradigm of these principles, you know, like if they came out and said, well, we believe in, you know, ordaining openly gay pastors, well, they'd be out, you know, because that's not allowed. So it's an interesting conversation about what's going to happen within the SBC. And then also, you have Rick Warren, who's now kind of doubled down on this and basically said that he is sorry to all women for his reading of the New Testament, which he has, you know, now changed his opinion on based on, you know, what he says is, you know, recent reading of original Greek text. And he says it more justifies the allowance of female authority in the church. And he basically says, I'm sorry I didn't see this for so long and didn't do something sooner. So just kind of a, you know, we have a lot of Southern Baptists in this area. You know, we have a lot of Catholics in this area. We have a lot of Methodists in this area. So I've named all the three big, and we got a lot of Charismatics and Pentecostals in this area too. But that's kind of going on. It's something that you're probably not going to see this on the nightly news or the front page of the paper or even the, you know, page 10 of the paper. But I'm telling you that's going on. It's kind of an interesting conversation because there is this long-standing question, or you might say disagreement. It's not a question for, you know, the people who believe that women shouldn't be. They're convinced they're right. Of course, it's not open to them. And the people who think that women should be, they're not open. They're not, you know, uncertain. So it's not an open question. It's just it's a disagreement. 437-1620. Supreme Court says North Carolina is well within its rights not to issue Confederate flag-based license plates. And though, you know, I don't know whether they should or shouldn't issue them, but they're right that it's up to North Carolina whether they should or shouldn't. You know, people who had basically sued saying, you're depriving us of our right to continue to have these plates that they had issued for a time. No, I mean, it's a state. The state can say what it wants to say or not say what it doesn't want to say. And if they don't want to have Confederate license plates, you're not entitled to a state saying that on your behalf. Even if you might think they should, you're not entitled to.
Stream us at NewsRadio 92.3.